नमों विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य शील प्रोपाद की ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, in every town and village, October 18, 1971. Having spent a busy 5 weeks in Africa, Prabhupada was ready to travel on to India. His plan was to visit Bombay, Calcutta and Delhi. He had made a strong beginning for ISKCON in India with land in Mayapur and centers in Bombay, Calcutta and New Delhi. And he had groups of disciples strategically located in other parts of India. Indians were recognizing ISKCON and appreciating its festivals, kirtans and prasadam. Life members were offering service and being benefited. They were receiving and reading ISKCON publications, and they were helping support the ISKCON centers. And this was only a start to get a foothold anywhere, whether in India, Africa, America or Russia, was certainly a great accomplishment. But a foothold was not enough. Although much had been done to establish the mission of Lord Chaitanya, much more remained to be done. Preaching Krishna consciousness was not a job that at some point would be completed. Of course, in one sense, it was already complete and perfect. Prabhupada's preaching had always been successful. Even when he had struggled alone in India to make his message heard, through Back to Godhead magazine, the League of Devotees and his translations of Srimad Bhagavatam. He had always remained fixed in the transcendental order of his spiritual master and Krishna. Therefore, he had been successful. The Krishna consciousness movement was already complete, and now by the will of its author, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this completeness was becoming manifest. But the work, the ecstasy, the samadhi of selflessly and single-pointedly serving that mission was unending and ever unfolding. Thank you. Unending and ever unfolding. Now there was a foothold in Africa. Tomorrow he would fly to Bombay, where Krishna had already allowed him a foothold. And as Krishna desired, he would continue to travel and to send his devotees and his books and his message until he reached every town and village in the world. So, Prabhupada started his mission from America. His first temple was a storefront in 26 Second Avenue. Then from New York to San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, then Boston, and in this way the movement, I think Boston was the fourth temple. There was one temple in between San Francisco.
LA?
No, LA was after anyway, there was one, Boston was the fourth temple. There was one temple in between, before LA, I think. Anyway, so then this is how Srila Prabhupada started his movement in a very simple way, just a small storefront. But you can see Prabhupada's vision. Although he was setting up his mission in a small little temple in the Lower East Side of New York, without any remarkable support or accomplishment. But Prabhupada, when it came to naming this society, he named it as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This way we can see that Prabhupada's vision was clear. Prabhupada could see what would happen. That also had been very clear from one encounter Prabhupada had with one Jewish gentleman in New York. This person, Prabhupada, just came to America a few weeks, maybe a few weeks in Butler, Pennsylvania, then to New York, and he didn't even have that 26th Second Avenue at that time. But Prabhupada was talking, this man was quite curious to find out who Prabhupada was. And they were sitting in a, he came and sat next to a bench on Srila Prabhupada in a park. And he was asking Prabhupada who he was, and then Prabhupada mentioned who he was, and he mentioned that he has many temples all around the world, all over the world. He has many followers. He's just kept on describing. The man was very surprised. He said, but he just came to America just the other day. And what are you talking about? You have so many temples. You have so many followings. And Prabhupada said, yes, they are there. Only time is separating us. So only time was separating. And in a similar note, we can say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also had his prediction in every town and village all over the world. In every town and village. And the question is that every town and village, what are you talking about? But Mahaprabhu's answer also will be in a similar note. Yes, it's there, only time is separating. So we, the followers of Srila Prabhupada, should never have any doubt that that will happen. It will happen, but the question is how sincerely we try to establish that movement. How sincerely we try to accomplish that mission. As we sincerely try, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will use us, and that prediction will become a reality. It will happen. There is no doubt about it that it will happen. But who will make it happen? Mahaprabhu can make it happen, but he doesn't want to make it happen himself. Mahaprabhu wants to make it happen through his devotees. That's where we see how Mahaprabhu made it happen through Srila Prabhupada. And then, Prabhupada has spread this movement all over the world, but every town and village aspect hadn't been completed by him. And you can see, Prabhupada spread this movement all over the world, and then there had been a setback. Things, the way things were during Prabhupada's time, is not the same anymore. Like when, especially when you come to America, I recall the way it used to be during Prabhupada's time, or even after Prabhupada's time. Prabhupada gave the push, Prabhupada set it up, and he gave the set the momentum. And it is through the momentum, this Krishna conscious movement was carrying on even after Prabhupada's disappearance, ISKCON was spreading. But it was the momentum that pushed it forward. But then there was a decline. Srila Prabhupada left in 77, 78, 79, 80. ISKCON was flourishing. 81, 82, 85, 86. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nikai Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Vasanam. Jai Shri Shri Giridhari Gopal Ki. But 86 onwards, or rather 85, 86, things started to decline. Decline is losses after losses. Leaders left, and along with them, so many followers left. So many of Prabhupada's disciples left. And the loss is still going on. Like we can see, like things are not the same anymore. Like when I used to come in the early 80s, the temples in America were booming. There were hundreds of devotees in each temple. But not today. Temples are empty. Yesterday, Brooklyn Temple. Sunday feasts seem to be quite exciting, quite crowded. But Ramadrupa was telling that there's hardly anybody coming during the week. I used to notice the Sunday, the weekdays, Mangal Arati, maybe even on Sunday Mangal Arati, 2-3 devotees. There is a, sometimes I get to hear some very painful statement that in some temples the number of deities are more than the number of devotees. So that is the unfortunate state of affairs. What to do? Now, we have to understand that we are actually lacking something. Srila Prabhupada set the example. Srila Prabhupada showed what could happen. What Srila Prabhupada did was, yes, a miracle, but at the same time, it was a reality. We can't say that people will not join Krishna Consciousness Movement, people will not accept Krishna Consciousness Movement. We have seen during Prabhupada's time so many devotees joined. So that shows people will accept Krishna Consciousness all over the world. Whether they are American, European, Chinese, Japanese, African, everywhere. Wherever this movement went, people joined. And they didn't join out of some fashion or some other reason. They joined because of the philosophy. Because they realized that this is the most important thing. This is how we can solve all our problems. And that's why people joined, people that's why they accepted Krishna Consciousness. But today, it's lacking. It's not there. The temples are there, deities are there, everything is there. But devotees are not there. So that is the setback after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. And we have to recognize that somewhere we are failing. we failed. Why we failed, we have to seriously consider. We have to recognize that we failed. But if we think everything is fine, everything is okay, then there won't be any room for rectification. In order to rectify, we have to recognize that there was a mistake. So let's recognize where the mistake is. And then this movement will spread. Mahaprabhu's prediction is there. It will happen. Just as Prabhupada said, all the temples are there, devotees are there, only time is separating. Similarly, we have to recognize that yes, Krishna consciousness movement is spread all over the world. What is separating is only time. It is there, it has happened, if we go ahead in time. But in between this period, we have to recognize what needs to be done. That is the most important consideration. What needs to be done? What can we do? What can I do? That should be our sincere meditation. What can I do to make it happen? Just as Prabhupada, he just continued with his struggle, with his endeavor. His spiritual master told him, gave him an assignment, and his meditation was, what can I do? And he tried so many things. Not that Prabhupada was successful all the time, but because of his sincere endeavor, in due course of time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made all the arrangements. That's again Prabhupada's own statement. Prabhupada mentioned that it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his spiritual master that made everything happen. They simply gave the credit to Srila Prabhupada. Now the question is, why did they give credit to Srila Prabhupada? They did it, but they gave the credit to Srila Prabhupada, meaning they used Srila Prabhupada as the via medium. That is Srila Prabhupada's credit. That his intention was pure. He did not have any personal agenda. He didn't have any selfish motive. All he wanted is to fulfill the mission of his spiritual master. All he wanted to execute the instruction of his spiritual master. So that is how we have to consider how sincere we are in fulfilling the desire of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. We have to seriously consider that. Srila Prabhupada gave us everything. And to have an institution like ISKCON is not an easy job. It's an incredible opportunity. The ready-made thing is there. Now the question is how we are going to utilize it. ISKCON is there. Srila Prabhupada has created. And one credit Srila Prabhupada's followers do have is that they still have maintained this institution. After all, the institution didn't fall apart. The institution is there. Many struggles, many storms had been there, many attacks had been there. But the institution of ISKCON is still together. Now the question is, how are you going to take advantage of this institution? Meaning, we don't have to come and set up another institution to spread Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada has done that. Today, the institution, or that means the setup, is there all over the world. Now the question is how we are going to utilize this facility to fulfill Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. We have two options open. we may try to take a part of the institution and say, this is my property. That is one option open to us. But if we do that, then the institution will become fragmented. Then the institution will become weak. And eventually this can lead to the disintegration of the institution. And the other option is, we can consider, how can I serve this institution? How can I enhance the performance of this institution? And if we do that, if all of us take up this responsibility to serve this institution, to fulfill the mission of Srila Prabhupada, then something else will happen. And in order to do that, we have to recognize that Srila Prabhupada is the proprietor of this institution. None of us are going to be the proprietor. We are the servants. No matter whoever we are, we don't have any right to claim any part of this institution as our property. We have to recognize that Srila Prabhupada is the proprietor of this institution and we all are his servants. And if we do that, then all kinds of wonderful things will start to happen. Then yes, many, many devotees will come and again our temples will become filled up. And many new temples will come. All kinds of, when people come, all kinds of wonderful things will start to happen. Now let us see what Mahaprabhu's plan is. Now another possible scenario is that the world is actually in a very, very precarious condition. The world is not as flourishing as it used to be in the recent past. The world is facing a major calamity. Two major calamities that the world is facing is, one is the financial crunch and the other is the terrorism. These two things are going to shake up this world in a massive way. And we don't really know what's going to happen in the next few years. The governments are struggling to rescue their countries out of this financial crunch. But for how long? Because this financial crunch, personally, I don't think they'll be able to come out of it, because the whole financial setup was based on cheating. The whole financial setup in the world today has been based on cheating. So if something is based on falsity, it's going to crumble. And it's crumbling. They're trying to protect it, save it, somehow prop things up. But how will they do that? That's another issue, like we don't want to get into the depth of it. But the reality is that the world is going to face a tremendous financial calamity. It's already facing. The America had been a main player in this game. The America became the center of the world economy. And now America's economy is collapsing. So what will happen? The whole world's economy will become affected by that. And when there is no money, when there is scarcity, then what will happen? People will start to fight with each other. And the terrorists, in the name of some religion, they have an agenda to take over the world. And they'll take advantage of this calamity. And they'll create a very, very critical situation all over the world. Because they are there everywhere. There is not a single nation where these terrorists are not there. It's only they're waiting for the right time to launch their attack. Now this is another case of case scenario, like how can that be saved? How can that critical situation be overcome? It can be done only through Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement. Therefore, devotees have to become serious. Devotees have to realize that we haven't come to Krishna consciousness to have a good time. Rather, when the bad times come, we can become more serious. So maybe that's why Mahaprabhu is creating this bad time, the critical situation. And in that critical situation, the sincere devotees will become more serious about their mission. And they will try to spread this movement more effectively. Anyway, the main point is, Srila Prabhupada has given us the perfect setup. Now, we have to simply take advantage of it. Hare Krishna, Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare. Any question or comment? Yes, Chandrasekhar.
Are there not positive signs?
Like?
In North America, and
maybe there are some positive signs here and there. Yeah, of course, like what's happening in Manhattan, First Avenue, is a positive sign. Let us see what happens eventually. Yes, some positive signs. Like, you know, we have to be open to Mahaprabhu's arrangement. Like these few little positive signs are not good enough or powerful enough to save the world from the critical condition that it's already in. How do you deal with the financial crunch, credit crunch, financial meltdown? So many people are losing their jobs and so many more will lose their jobs. When people lose their jobs, then what will happen? They'll probably tolerate for a few months, maybe even a few years. Then what will happen? They'll become violent. And the way the world is today, it's in a very, very critical condition. Like everywhere, what they have done is so artificial. Like it would be interesting to note, in the Western countries, how much food is grown locally. How much food they are actually consuming. Like for example, in London, in England, there is abundance of food, but most of the food is just being transported from different parts of the world. America is a vast country, there is agriculturally fairly, this country can be called self-sufficient. But again, the method that they are using for agriculture, you know, like it's very, very shaky. Like in America also, like how much food is actually imported from other countries. Now, if the supply stops, then what will happen? And on top of everything, if people don't have money to buy food, what will happen? They don't have food, but they have many guns. Right? And to think nothing will happen is not an intelligent way to think. Rather, intelligence is to see way beyond what may happen. That foresight is actually the sign of intelligence. You see, what is the ultimate consideration? You see, money is the medium of exchange. So, exchange, the commodity you are exchanging with money. So there has to be some balance. Right? Now, money was not the medium of tangible commodity, exchange for tangible commodity. What happened in today's world, money has been, money's worth became in relation to shares and all those artificial things, artificial structure. You see, money, first of all, money was in lieu, it came in lieu of, in exchange of gold, or the medium, the actual medium of exchange. But today's currency is not gold-based anymore. Today's currency is totally fake. And then they have artificially hyped up their currency situation by giving people credit. The commodities that they were creating, one could buy with their credit. They didn't have the money, but they had the kind of an illusory concept that this person is worth so much, and he bought his things with that credit. He didn't have the money, but he had the credit. With that credit, he bought. And that is what is crunching, because that is unreal. And people cheated also on that. Like, say, you may have credit for $10,000, but if you go to 20 places using that $10,000, how much do you get? $200,000. The people have been cheating on that. And that's just to give an example. So, and now the point is, people may have currency. Like what the governments are doing now, actually. They're bringing in so many billions and trillions of dollars. But they're just, you know, it's paper currency. They're just printing it and then pumping it in the market just to create a temporary illusion that, oh, we are all right. But the ultimate challenge will be when there is no food in the market to eat. What are you going to do with your money? So you have your money, so you are prepared to any price. So that will hike up the prices of the food. And the currency value will drop, and you know, it'll lead to a total chaos eventually. Now the only solution to that is the devotees will be protected by Krishna. Krishna will protect the devotees. So there will be crisis, but the devotees will push on Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement. That will be the test. Who is a devotee and who is not? The real devotees will push on Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement in spite of all these calamities. The more critical the situation becomes, the devotees will become more serious, more sincere. At the face of all kinds of difficulties, even at the face of death, they'll push this movement. And that will show the potency of this movement. Devotees will not run away. But besides that, where can we run away? Where can we go? The only place we can go to is Krishna's lotus feet. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Param Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Giridhara Gopal Ki Jai, Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. And Krishna gives protection. We can say Krishna gave protection to Prahlad, Krishna gave protection to Dhruva Maharaj, Krishna gave protection to Arjuna, Krishna gave protection to Draupadi, and Even in other cultures we see like how Krishna actually gave protection to his sincere followers. Like when Moses was leading the Jews to Israel from Egypt. They were traveling through desert. What is the food there? But God was supplying them a food called manna. They were getting their food. So Krishna will provide. If Krishna can provide food for his devotees in the middle of a desert, then Krishna can provide the food for his devotees anywhere. So devotees will be protected by Krishna. Therefore, at the time of crisis, devotees will become more serious. And that will be the test of our devotion. That will be the test of our faith in Krishna. That will be the test of our commitment to Krishna consciousness. Yes, Shamshishka.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered this to practically everybody, whoever is spread to Krishna consciousness, but we limit it to that ISKCON is the only way. So, is that a good sign, healthy sign, or we should really encompass all over who are religious or at least Vaishnavas and incite them together to spread this Lord consciousness rather than just claiming that ISKCON is the only proprietorship?
Yeah, the claim, you know, has to be substantiated with proper action. Like, you see, the main point actually is when a group of devotees are functioning, when a group is functioning, and then in order to be effective, they have to become united. They have to function jointly. So in order to jointly function, they have to have a head. So that is the thing, we have to recognize a head. Without a head, we cannot function. Now yes, all the devotees are there all over the world, they are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But the question is, under whose leadership they are going to function? So here, at least Prabhupada came and created an institution which has been successful, which has been able to fulfill the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now you tell me, we are seeing that Mahaprabhu's prediction is becoming true through one person and his arrangement. If I am a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what should I do? Should I line up with him? But if I don't, then that actually shows I am not really concerned about Mahaprabhu's arrangement. I am concerned about my agenda. I am concerned about how am I going to establish myself. Right? So that is actually the challenge, that's the test. If they're really followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what is the problem in accepting? Of course, we also should be open. We should keep our doors open. Come. Doesn't matter. You're a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Come. Let us spread the mission. But if we try to take my share, our share of Prabhupada's, you know, arrangement, then who will trust me? We have to become the sincere follower of Mahaprabhu's mission. Then only it's through our action when people will develop that confidence. Yes, he is a true follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then they line up. So it's a two-way traffic. It's a reciprocal thing. ISKCON has to be a real according to Srila Prabhupada's arrangement, and the others should be open and frank and selfless, non-envious, to come and join this movement. So,
like Vaishnavism is a very broad term, and we are aligning that yes, they should join this camp, but they are spreading Krishna consciousness. People are becoming God conscious, and they may have designated or they may have their own some separate leader, but people are becoming God conscious anyway. If they chant the names of Krishna, recognizing as the Supreme Lord, And then in our language, Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON movement, so called. Because ISKCON movement is getting like choked up, because they feel that we are the only way, just like Christians, they say. And then we don't encompass or recognize that there are some others. May not be as big, maybe only small capacity, but they still are there, existing. And
yes, so our action should be honest. Like, when we say we are the only way, our understanding should be Mahaprabhu is the only way. Srila Prabhupada is the only way, not I am the only way. And my way is the highway. That shouldn't be our attitude. It should be genuine. And the other thing is, you see, like here, I mean, if they are preaching Krishna consciousness and making people God conscious and everything, that's very fine. That's no problem. But still the effectivity of just lining up with ISKCON it's not going to be that much. I'll give you an analogy. The king has gone to some place. And in the absence of the king, the enemy has taken over his kingdom. So, a loyal follower of the king is now trying to create an army to defeat the enemy. So, at a time like that, naturally, the loyal followers of the king will line up with the person who is raising the army. And if others are at different places raising the army for the sake of the king, eventually what will happen? They'll come and also join him. Right? But if somebody claims that he is the follower of the king and he is trying to fight the enemy, but what he is doing, the person who is raising the army for the king, he comes and steals the soldiers from his army, then is he really a follower of the king? So that is the problem. You know, ISKCON is not worried about others spreading the movement. We appreciate that. But the problem is when some people come and steal the devotees from ISKCON. So that is a clear indication that they are not actually functioning according to Mahaprabhu's interest. They have their own personal agenda. That is the problem, and that's what we resent, and that's why we try to defend ourselves from. If you want to spread Krishna consciousness, make your devotees, raise your army, go ahead, do it. We'll appreciate that. We may not be working, functioning under the same leadership, but still, you are serving the same mission. But don't come and steal our men, which we are actually trying to raise after so much difficulty and struggle. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, one cannot steal. How can one steal our supporters and our members if we are doing the right thing? If we are preaching. For example, someone may come from an ex-temple or from some other organization to our temple and speak to this Prabhu. But if this Prabhu is being treated nicely here, the chances of his leaving is very slim.
Well, if you're dealing with mature, grown-up people, then really the chances are very slim. But if there are some children, yes, they will be exposed to that. Like, you may be a very good father, right? You may are taking care of your children, right? But somebody comes and tells your son, you come with me, I'll give you chocolate. Right? That's how actually in India, when we are young, we are told that, you know, be careful, that don't, if somebody gives you something, don't. Because there are, you know, like people who, there are individuals who steal children. Yes, children, when you are dealing with children, yes, they are susceptible to be stolen. But the point that you are making is possible. If the, our situation is so great, then why they should go? And that actually implies that our situation today, which I mentioned, is not that great. Right? But still, our situation is better than what they have. Show me another institution that is functioning at least as effectively as ISKCON. That reminds me, somebody who left ISKCON once came to LA Ratha Yatra. And he was telling how ISKCON is dead, how ISKCON is finished. And Badri Narayan Prabhu overheard that. So he just went and accosted him. He said, look, all these people, so many people, why did they come? Look at all this queue, people are taking prasad. Look at these devotees chanting Hare Krishna so ecstatically. Tell me, who made all these arrangements? And you say ISKCON is dead? Even you came here, and you say ISKCON is dead? So do something, instead of criticizing or pointing out faults, do something at least, if not better, or at least equal to what ISKCON is doing. And if you are that great, then why come coming and taking our men? Whether you call it stealing or whatever. Whether you call it, whatever you may call it, but why are you coming and taking our men? Why don't you go, if you are that great, if you are that successful, if you are that wonderful, then why don't you go preach, make devotees, and try to spread Krishna consciousness? Why are you coming to our turf and taking our men away?
Well, I suppose that will go from one situation to the next, like from one temple to the next.
I'm talking about the situation now. The people, those who are, we are talking about, they come to ISKCON program, or they come next to ISKCON temple. They'll rent a place in ISKCON temple, they'll bring their guru, or whatever you may call him. They'll have a program to attract the ISKCON congregation, ISKCON devotees, and take them away. Give them cheap initiation and take them away. Make your devotees and give them initiation. We are not going to object to that. I'm not saying that ISKCON situation is perfect, which I already addressed before, that ISKCON is not in a perfect situation. But because our situation is not perfect, that doesn't mean that anybody can come and attack and plunder our setups.
Sometimes you see somebody is coming to the temple for a long time, but they don't really want to follow the initiation, or they feel very comfortable. But if somebody else comes who is also giving God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, and people want to follow and they become very much attracted to that person, it may not be next to the temple, but wherever he does, and he joins that, and it's start like feel more serious, like I could surrender to this person, or this appeals to me, because everybody is of individual mind, and there are people who are maybe attracted to this or that, and how we could legalize, make it like a legislation that if they have once come to ISKCON, they become this ISKCON people and nobody can touch them, or if they touch, but then somebody gives them more inspiration.
Yes, somebody may give them more inspiration, but what is the engagement? That person comes for 3 days, sets his camp, and gives initiation to somebody, and then he goes away. At least when he was here, although not initiated, he was coming to ISKCON temple, he was able to associate with devotees and practice Krishna consciousness. But then when this guy comes and gives him initiation, then what happens? Do they have another temple where they can practice Krishna consciousness?
They might be able to open.
If they can do that, then fine, no problem. If you can maintain their Krishna consciousness, and as I was saying, I mean, if you can create a situation better than ISKCON or even equal to ISKCON, that's fine. But you don't have created a situation better than that, and you'll never be able to create a situation better than that. What Prabhupada has done, nobody else will be able to do that. Therefore, the best option is to just line up with Prabhupada. And on our part, we have to create a perfect situation in ISKCON. I used to actually tell them, and still I believe in that, that when they walk, we should run. When they run, we should fly. When they fly, we should be going in rockets. So that is when our situation is always much better than them, then no one will be interested in them. The facilities that we are providing for Krishna consciousness is superior to others. But what is actually happening, how these people are being misled, and the fault is actually ours, I will say. They are taking advantage of our mistake. You see, our biggest asset, our real credit, is Prabhupada. Right? But if we consider that now Prabhupada is gone and now we are the leaders, and then if people have a choice to see, well, a choice between me and somebody else who apparently looks much better, they'll naturally fall for him. But if I say that, look, you're not coming to me. When you come to ISKCON, you are not getting me, you are getting Prabhupada. Right? And my business is to give Prabhupada to you. If we make this understanding clear, then you see, compared to me, this guy may look very, very superior. But to Prabhupada, compared to Prabhupada, he is nobody. So that should be our main point of winning point or asset. And here we are actually making a mistake. We are not, I will say, we are not promoting Prabhupada enough. And as a result of that, these people are taking advantage.
There is a lot of internal strife and her position are to be away from Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada, and that is happening. And
it is not being recognized to that extent. It is being recognized. It's being recognized. Just consider the way ISKCON was 20 years back with this understanding. And today. 20 years back, I couldn't even speak about it in a class. The GVC will probably take me to task if I did that. Not 20 years, maybe 25 years back. But at least today we can freely discuss about it. Maybe we haven't been able to rectify the situation, but at least we are identifying the problem. Personally, I feel that things are improving. And ultimately what happens? Ultimate consideration is that let Krishna consciousness movement spread. And how it will happen, whether it will happen through Third World War or whether it will happen through, some major calamity, or it will happen in a very, very smooth and wonderful way. We are not worried about that. We are not concerned about that. Our concern is let it happen. And in order to make it happen, whatever sacrifice we have to make, let's be prepared to make the sacrifice. Yes, Vrindavan Chandra?
And what their tactics, that what I have heard or what I have seen, that their tactics there, I am also producing other rulers, and I am which is evidence in the Prabhupada speaking so, what the difference between outside of teaching and somebody.
Then why don't you join the institution that Prabhupada gave? Why are you hurting that institution? Prabhupada said, what was Prabhupada's biggest concern was ISKCON. Prabhupada knew that he had only a short period of time. He started this movement at the age of 70. So how many years Prabhupada had? Only a few years. Therefore Prabhupada was so emphatic about the institution, because it is through this institution that this movement will spread. If the institution is not there, like Gauriyamath, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur created the institution, Gauriyamath. When it fell apart, what happened? What happened to preaching? What happened to his mission? It all, you know, some individuals have their mot, and as Prabhupada said, they're just having, they're ringing the bell and having picnic. So it, now, if ISKCON falls apart, it will simply become reduced to what Gauriyamath has become today. Few individuals probably will continue with their Krishna consciousness. They'll have a group of disciples and followers. They'll have a few temples and they will be carrying on. But the worldwide mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will not become manifest through them. So in order to do that, we need an institution. And that institution has been created by Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that, but they destroyed it. Then Srila Prabhupada took the spirit of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and from the ruins of Gauriyamath, Srila Prabhupada established this ISKCON. So now, the thing is, if you want to follow Srila Prabhupada, follow ISKCON. So that means you are not following Prabhupada. That means you are just saying you are following Srila Prabhupada, but you are actually taking advantage of Prabhupada. And I'll give you an example. The persons that you are talking about, that person used to first claim that Prabhupada was the Shiksha Guru. Then Prabhupada became his friend. And now he is finding faults with Srila Prabhupada. He is pointing out Prabhupada's mistake. That this is what Prabhupada did wrong. Prabhupada's purports are not correct. So that shows how loyal he is to Srila Prabhupada. Whatever fits them, they just use them. Anyway, my point actually is, we don't want to criticize anybody or find faults with anybody, as long as they leave us alone. And I feel it is our responsibility to educate our devotees. So that they don't become, they don't fall in that trap and lose their spiritual life. You may say that their spiritual life is becoming stronger. They lost their spiritual life and now this person is reviving them and their spiritual life. What will happen when this person is gone? What will be their shelter? Will they be able to become united and carry on the mission? They are already fighting. They are already not united. They already don't have any institution. So what's the hope? Really the hope is someday they will realize their mistake and come back to ISKCON. And I hope also by the time ISKCON's situation also will become better.
Well, as we see in the West, it's it's so difficult nowadays to make devotees and also to make a living in the temple. So should it be our priority in a way to build a huge temple? Should that be still our...
Well, you see, it doesn't matter whether one lives in a temple or whether one lives at home. And the main consideration is that how much he is committed to Krishna consciousness. How effectively he is rendering his service to spread Krishna consciousness. If he can do it staying at home, then stay at home. If it helps staying in a palace, stay in a palace. If it helps staying in a temple, then just stay in a temple. Some will stay in the temple, some will stay at home, and some will keep traveling. You'll always find some people, especially the youth, they like some situation where they can be completely committed. For them, brahmachari life is desirable. And if we can promote this, I mean, if we can establish this movement properly, yes, it will happen. There will be many, many brahmacharis living in the temple.
I think Arjuna's question was, given the context that there's not many young men or women joining temples, should our priority be to build big temples today? No,
she didn't ask that. Whether building a big temple or not, that's not the consideration.
Yeah, the point is like you're saying, woman, like, is it a priority because we, the manpower, because of the
temples are already there. Like, the question is, whether we should emphasize brahmachari life living in a temple or whether we should emphasize. There's no need to emphasize anything. Whatever is practical, just use that. Just do that. And yes, if there are hundreds of thousands of brahmacharis, yes, we'll need big temples. But at this point, what is our situation? Temples are empty. Previously, there were so many brahmacharis that there was no place for them to sleep. In Berry Place in London, the brahmacharis were sleeping on the landing of the staircase. It was so full. But now we have big temples, but no one to sleep there. they use the temple only on Sundays. So what's the point in having big temples when people are not coming to render service? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, isn't our temple presidents and temple leaders should encourage people who come and ask to stay in temples, keep an open door for them? Like if we look back on the early days, when one will come to the temple and ready to ask to stay because their life might be nothing in the outside, but the door is closed when someone will come who might not have anything. Just some person in the street.
Well, it's difficult to comment on that because, the temple president who is managing the temple, he knows what is practical and what is not. Like, say, for example, the temples are empty, but if some thieves want to come and stay in the temple, and if the temple president says no,
then I will say, how will we know who's the saint and who's the thief?
First, let them practice Krishna consciousness. That is the proof of your sincerity is following the regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds.
Again, I will say, Guru, in the past, people practically came to the temples who become rising stars in ISKCON.
Yeah, but they were following the four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds.
But it started in the temple. They were practiced at Sankirtan or Prachar.
Yeah, as I said, the first criteria was that they are following the principles. That is the proof. Like, you have to follow the principles. We can't just allow the temple to be a dhat, what's it called, homeless. A place for the homeless. You don't have a place, come to the temple. I mean, if somebody is following the regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds, wants to render service, there is no temple president who will say no to him.
You're not in America, Guru. We are seeing this all the time.
Anyway, I mean, let's not get into that. Like, my point is that it should not, if it is the case, it shouldn't be. If someone is chanting and following the principles, willing to serve, yes, our temple shouldn't or should be open to them. Because temples are meant for devotees. I mean, I'm talking about brahmacharis.
Yes.
Right? Like, a situation may come, you know, when many people will want to come to the temple and live here. You know, when their people don't have any food to eat, no place to stay, you'll find many people want to. But then we have to see who are serious and who are not. Who are coming to serve Krishna and who are coming to take service from Krishna. This place is not the place to take service from Krishna. This is the place, temples are the place where we are here to serve Krishna.
That was the point I was making, Gumash. We have to be able to see someone in order to weed out who is coming to take or who is coming to serve.
So then, instead of talking to me, just talk to the temple president. Because I can only give you some theoretical answer. But the practical point is, practical point can be addressed only by the individual who is in that situation. I am not in that situation to make any appropriate comment. But one thing I can tell you, like, say I'm involved in Ujjain in the temple, and I'll give you an example, you know. Like, we have quite a few devotees from Bengal in Ujjain. Because when we started, we brought all these devotees from Bengal. But now, you know, we made a policy that we will try to get Hindi-speaking ones to join. We don't want to bring Bengalis anymore. Because otherwise it will become a Bengali temple in the middle of Madhya Pradesh. So you see that when you are in management, you have to make some practical policies, you know. But you know, if somebody is qualified, like, it's not just a hard and fast policy. See, there is one, and also we don't want to have householders. We had householders. And when the householders join, we take care of them fully. Their rent is paid, they get money to maintain their family, and prasad is free and all that. Because, you know, I feel that the devotees, those who are trying to render full-time service, we have to take care of them. If we say that you render, especially householders, we say that you take care, you render full service to the temple, and at the same time you maintain yourself. You know, nobody is coming with an inheritance, you know, to kind of maintain themselves like that. You know, that, you know, qualified devotees, when they come, we have to. But now we also made a policy that we won't, on principle, we won't take householders for Ujjain. But then again, you know, there is one household, one boy, who got married. And he's working. And I told him to quit his job and come to Ujjain. Because he's an engineer, he's a civil engineer. And we need a civil engineer for our construction. Now, when you hire a civil engineer, we have to pay him money. So here is somebody who is a devotee and who is a civil engineer. Might as well, you know, get him. So my point is, you know, like these policies are should be flexible. Like according to the need of the moment. Like some individuals, if he's valuable, then we have to take care of their family situation. And that's what, now what we're actually doing is, we're trying to create a situation where the temple activities will be maintained by the brahmacharis. So that way, you see, temple will be free from extra liabilities. And the householders will be engaged in activities that generate funds. So, the many of the householders are actually becoming involved in construction and restaurant and things like that. So that is, since they are actually the setups that generate funds, from that setup you don't mind paying because it's generating funds. But the temple doesn't generate funds. Rather, temple needs to be supported. Yeah.
Is there any harm in having temple-related businesses which could run and support the devotees who could also in turn help the temple in some way by the revenue?
Like as I said, like we have to make a practical approach. Whatever is practical, let's do that. Like Prabhupada's point is, utility is the principle. When something has some utility, we must use that. Like, okay, I thought I'll give a short class today. Gaur Premanande, Hari Srila Prabhupada.